Welcome to Jawa Jabber, a Star Wars podcast dedicated to spreading our own little slice of positivity throughout the galaxy. From the prequels to the sequels to every Disney Plus spinoff they want to throw at us, we're here to celebrate any time we get to spend in our favorite galaxy together, and we want you to come along for the ride. I'm David Wren, joined by my bro hosts Dennis, Kyle, and Matt. We invite you to sit back, relax, and enjoy our fully armed and operational podcast.
And this is Jawa Jabber.
Hello there, Star Wars fans, and welcome to another episode of Jawa Jabber. I am your supreme leader, David Wren, and as always, I am joined by my best friends and bro hosts. We've got Dennis the Phantom Menace here. And Kenobi.
Hi, I'm Kyle.
And Matt, the radar technician. I don't know why this makes me laugh so much, but that's okay.
Hello there, Supreme Leader.
Oh, hey, what's up? All right, so today we are going to be talking about the second episode of the third season of The Mandalorian, which is titled The Minds of Mandalore.
Oh, I thought it was The Minds of Moria. Never mind.
No, what's that? What's that? Lord of the Rings?
Yeah.
You walked into the wrong podcast.
Yeah. Yes. If you're looking for the Minds of Moria, please see Lord of the Rings Jabber or Hobbit Jabber.
Gollum Gossip.
There you go. That's a good one. Yeah. Hey, maybe we'll have to branch out and do more podcasts. That would be cool.
Filthy Mandalorians.
I mean, hey, that one had a volcano that they were throwing something into, right? Like, you know, it's kind of similar. But yeah. All right. Welcome back to Jawa Jabber, where we endlessly go on tangents, sometimes related to the topic we're talking about, but not always. All right. So, Kyle, you wanted to give some credit to some wonderfully talented people that are responsible for this episode, correct?
Absolutely. I think it's important to highlight the people who are behind the episode, in addition to the crew, without naming them all.
100%.
The director of this episode was Rachel Morrison. She is most famously known as being the cinematographer on Black Panther, Dope, Fruitvale Station, and Mudbound, which was actually nominated for an Oscar for Best Achievement in Cinematography. As always, it was created and written by Jon Favreau, and the director of photography for this episode is Dave Klein. His first bout with Star Wars was on The Tragedy last season, the Boba Fett episode, and he did about five episodes of Book of Boba Fett, and he's going to do half of Mandalorian season 3.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
That concludes my report.
Well, thank you, Kyle, for that behind-the-scenes report, and like you said, I think it is very important, and I'm glad that you brought that up to me, you know, so we can definitely get these people the credit that they very much deserve, because what an episode this was. I don't know about you guys. I was not expecting to be on Mandalore this quickly into the season. I don't know. I mean, I've watched a lot of TV shows. I've watched a lot of serialized TV shows. I've obviously watched a lot of Star Wars. I don't know. Like, it shocked me at how quickly we got the story going, but I'm not saying that in a bad way. Like, it's just made me more excited for what's going to happen later on in the season, because we've still got 6 episodes, and I swore that we'd be at Mandalore, like, I don't know, episode 5, episode 6 or something, you know, and I'm not saying we won't necessarily be back to Mandalore or whatever.
Yeah, so, like, his whole quest and goal after the last season was to go back to Mandalore to bathe in the living waters, right? And so that, you know, he kind of made it seem like that was, you know, a big focal point of this whole season. And now he's already done that in the second episode.
I kind of like that. I think that's exciting, because then I honestly have no idea where the season's going, because it's already caught up to what it seemed like was at least part of the end goal. So, like, from here on out, it seems like, hey, anything can happen. And if there are any spoilers that show up, I'm not going to look at them.
I didn't see it coming either. I mean, aside from reading the brief plot leak that was very in-depth.
I didn't know it was coming, even though I read the spoilers, but, you know, I didn't know it was coming.
But hey, I just want to point out, who predicted the Mythosaur before the season even started? Who was it?
Matt,
I want to hear everybody say who it was. Yeah,
it was you, Matt. 5:10 in the morning when we were watching for the first time yesterday. What did I text you? I said Kyle was right. It's exactly what I texted you.
Yep.
It was literally like 5:10 in the morning. It's the end of the episode. I'm like, Kyle was right, and in the second episode.
I want to. Before we move on, I love that. I love that. I was talking to my older brother about this the other day. Or yesterday, I guess, that I love that we don't know where the rest of the season is heading. And with the next episode being 56 minutes, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he unites a couple clans in the next episode of other Mandalorians. I mean, the season is moving at like a breakneck pace, and I like that we don't have to worry about him going to Tatooine to have someone do him a favor first. He has to go on a mission for them. I like that we don't know where we're going right now.
Yeah, no, I love the pacing of this, and, you know, it's very breakneck, like you said, Kyle, but it's not, to me, it's not the same type of breakneck pace that Rise of Skywalker was on opening night.
I think any scene with Haley Mato's classic.
Yeah, I love her. Like, I know some fans aren't crazy about her.
I love her comic relief. I think it's, like...
Right, exactly, and perfect. It adds...
And her character... Yeah, and her character actually does... you know, help service the show too. Like, she's been very important in a lot of aspects. So she's not like a pointless character by any means.
I mean, she built the N1 fighter. I mean, my God, like, we owe her everything.
She must not know what happened between Din Djarin and Boba Fett. Cause she asks, are you going to take Boba Fett out? Like, why would he do that?
Like,
it's kind of weird, name drop, but at the same time, like, what's going on? Does she not like Boba Fett?
Another highlight for me was everything going on with Grogu. Like, I love how he doesn't talk at all, but he still can communicate with everyone. He was communicating with R5. He was communicating with Bo-Katan. He was, you know, like, he got stuff done, and it was...
Sure. He can talk like I did at the beginning. That was my noise. Well, that's what he says, apparently.
Right, exactly. But you know what I'm saying. Like, you know, there's no even, like, alien language with subtitles that we have to watch at 4:45 in the morning when we're watching this episode. Like, you know, like, he's just cooing and whatever, and, like, everyone's on, like, he gets his point across, and, like, that is fantastic. Like, it's fantastic from a storytelling perspective. It's fantastic as a character perspective. I love that they're making Grogu more involved in the story, it seems like, because, you know, I mean, yes, he's cute, and yes, he sells toys, and, you know, like, stuff like that. And I think it's kind of easy just to have him in the background or whatever. But, like, you know, he's really becoming integral to the story. And I think that that's phenomenal. I think that's a great job by everyone involved.
When he turned his flashlight on his
little, God, I know.
His little hover cam. I was like, okay, he's grown up a little bit. He's a big boy now.
He's becoming a big boy, yeah. Big baby,
He almost said his first word, too.
He almost did. He almost said...
Pelly.
He almost said Pelly. And you know what? I hope that that is his, like, first word.
You think Grogu wears, like, the Star Wars version of Pampers? Because he's a big kid now, you know?
I don't know, but so Pampers, if you want to sponsor Jawa Jabber, just credit us.
I was going to say, too, I was amazed at how great they did with his movements, because he did a lot of moving and walking and climbing and jumping in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Like, way more than I've ever seen before, I think.
I think the only one that would rival it is the Boba Fett episode where he's training with Luke.
I agree.
But other than that, I mean, yeah, this is definitely the most he's moved in this series. And yeah, he's looking... I don't know. It's funny. One of my customers And I'm not going to name him by name because I don't want everyone in the internet world to hate him or whatever. But, like, he almost wishes that Grogu was CGI. I don't know about you guys. I'm sure you guys are in the same boat as I am. But, like, there's something just charming about the puppetry. And to me, it makes it more Star Wars, you know, hearkening back to Yoda and The Empire Strikes Back and, you know, his...
It makes it more real, honestly.
It does make it more real. Like, yes, you kind of in the back of your head know that it's a puppet, but it doesn't matter. Like, that's the magic of the Muppets. And, you know, like, I guess to an extent Sesame Street, because they're, you know, Muppet Studios also, but like,
wait a second, is that what Muppets is a combination of? Is that magic and puppets?
I mean, it could be, probably. I'm sure.
My brain just exploded.
I know, I never thought of that before either. But of course, we're getting a little off topic. So I know another thing we're all going to want to talk about, and I wanted to bring it up early because I feel like we're going to be talking about it for a while, is Bo-Katan with the Darksaber.
Oh, I thought we were talking about something else about Bo-Katan, but we'll save that for an After Dark episode.
Yeah, that's all you, Dennis. You could have your own episode just talking about
Dennis, hey, just twice your age.
That's fine. That's fine.
In universe, Bo-Katan's like 60. You guys know that, right?
You know, I was gonna, Kyle, because you're my resident, you're the resident expert here. I was gonna say, because I mean, it's not like she was a kid in the Clone Wars.
No, she was probably 25, maybe you can get away with her being 20, I doubt it, but I mean, even about how a teenager in Obi-Wan's age lines up, she's probably 25, almost pushing 30, but, or,
so that means she's like 60 now.
So she's, yeah, she's got to be at least over 50, at least.
Yeah, close to 60. If Din was like 9 or 10 years old on those flashbacks of the Clone Wars and she's 25, 30, I mean, yeah, she's pushing 60 and years old.
Bo's got to have some kind of space like Botox or something, because she looks great.
She got that spice from Dune, who's just keeping her young.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, and Katie Sackhoff is only 42 years old. So, I mean, she looks great regardless. But, I mean, so she's definitely playing older. Now, are we concerned with age in the Star Wars universe? Not really.
Not so much.
No, so much. But no, I mean, she did. She looked great fighting. Of course, Dennis had his booty moment that we'll talk about at some point.
Listen, sitting on that throne must not be very comfortable. She's got a nice little blanket there for her, but like, she's got some cushion.
I cannot believe that we're talking about this. But yeah, I have been a big champion of Din with the Darksaber. I thought it was a really cool development. I liked when he was having issues wielding it during Book of Boba Fett, and the armor was trying to teach him and it wasn't really working. And I love that, like, he just kind of takes it out and starts slashing and hacking. You know, like, I felt a similar feeling during The Force Awakens when Finn had the Skywalker saber. Like, I like when non-Force users are using some kind of lightsaber. There's something cool about it to me. But the way she moved with that Darksaber, like, I'm sorry, it's hers. Like,
it was much more fluid than him and him dragging it. I think it's honestly because he's a reluctant person to hold it. Like, he doesn't necessarily want it, but she does.
Right, but she does, yeah.
And she also has experience with it, though.
She does. Correct. I wanted Matt, either you or Kyle or Dennis, to talk a little bit about that, because I'm not totally clear on how much experience she has with it. I know she got it from Sabine and, you know, but like how, like, I don't really remember how much of that we saw, like how, like.
I'll defer to Kyle or Matt, because that supplemental material between what we saw in Rebels to what we see now, I don't know much about.
I don't either. Do either of you want to elaborate real quick on that?
Matt, unless you know otherwise, I don't think there is. I mean, you're under the impression that she had it for probably a couple of years, but I don't think there's anything concrete in comics or novels about it.
Oh, okay.
Or how she lost it.
I just assumed that I missed something, like some kind of comic or some kind of whatever, but if I didn't, then okay. Well,
thank God, because sometimes it's kind of hard. Like, they're pigeonholing a lot of these writers for these TV shows because there's so much supplementary material. And I'm all for it. I love that Star Wars is in so many different mediums, but it's getting to the point where you're just putting yourself in a box. I mean, they literally could not use Kira in anything.
Right.
No, they can't.
That's off topic, but...
Yeah, they've pretty much explained her whole story beyond Solo in the comics. And like, exactly. I think the nice thing about the comics right now is they're focused on like the between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi era, or, you know, time gap. And there's, you know, they're not making any TV or movies in that time period. So it's, you know, I don't think it's not really preventing them from doing anything on TV. But like Kyle said, I don't, with the Darksaber and bow, I can't remember anything that really says or sets how long she had it, other than, you know, it was more than like a week. It was some period of time, but I don't think it was years.
If that's the case, then I feel like then at least there's even more opportunity for the writers and the storytellers to develop that part of her character, because there's more ability to expand on that if necessary in The Mandalorian or maybe beyond it.
And I feel like a terrible Star Wars fan right now, but I'm going to throw this out to you guys. Moff Gideon is responsible for the Night of the Thousand Tears?
I don't know if he's responsible 100%. There was something I read recently that said, I mean, we know he was there, and that's when he took the Darksaber, is somewhere around that. But
did he mention that
he was
somewhere?
There and
like,
he was
did
a
I
huge
miss that?
He said in a previous episode, I don't remember if it was season one or season two, where he says, you know, I was there for the Night of a Thousand Tears and talked about it. And it might have been when they had the flashback with the bombers flying over Mandalore. I don't know if it was in the same sequence.
That's right. It was when they were holed up in the cantina, and then Moff Gideon came out and he was talking to the unnamed actor that is no longer also in
Star Wars. But the flashback was in Boba Fett, though.
I was going to say the bombing flashback was Boba Fett, yes.
Yeah, right. Moff was definitely there. I don't know if he was as high ranking, but he was definitely there.
And we're allowed to
read
say her
somewhere.
Name.
I did read somewhere recently where it made it sound like he was more heavily, like, higher up involved in it. Like, maybe, like, executed a lot of the mission, or whatever you want to call it, I guess. But, obviously, I'm sure, you know, somebody way higher up was more, you know, directly responsible. I don't know if it was Grand Moff Tarkin or who it was, but...
Right. Well, he was a Moff, was higher than Lieutenant or Commander.
Right.
So.
Yeah. But I got to imagine that, I mean, maybe he was the Imperial Moff for that area. I don't remember if they talk about that in Rebels at all. Do you remember, Kyle?
I don't think they did. I really don't think they did. I could be wrong.
I don't think they did either. Because
if he was the Moff,
Rebels.
Yeah, if he was the Moff of, like, you know, whatever sector that Mandalore, the system that Mandalore's in, then I guess, you know, he would have been pretty much directly responsible for all of it. But maybe that's something that's still, you know, on the way that we will learn this season or in the upcoming season.
Well, probably, because remember the actor was saying that he's, like, in a lot of season three? Like, he had big things coming up in season three? And I know actors talk all the time and, like, whatever, but, like, and it's only been... It feels like it's been four episodes, but it's only been two. Like, I know we haven't seen him yet. You know, we just know that he's in custody of the New Republic.
Yeah, the more we think about it, the more I'm thinking that this episode, we're going to see all of the remaining footage. And if we don't, so it's either going to go that way, where we see everything in this episode with Coruscant and Mando reunited the clans, where they kind of show two different storylines between Dr. Pershing and Mando. Or this next episode is about reuniting the clans, and then episode four is Dr. Pershing's mission to Coruscant. Or Hosnian and Primer, whatever this place is.
Well, I'm sure you guys have seen it, but it's supposed to be about 56 minutes long, so quite a long episode.
I wouldn't be surprised if in the next episode, I'm kind of starting to wonder if the Dr. Pershing and, is it Katie O'Brien, her character, intercom officer. I can't remember her name, but I kind of think that the mission those two go on to Kirasan is pot or whatever city that is that they're going to break Moff Gideon out. And I'm kind of thinking again that he is, you know, I remember saying before that I thought Katie and Bo-Katan were going to be possibly an antagonist of this season, but the way she, you know, jumped up and rushed to save Mando's life and kind of their interactions, I'm not so quick to think the same thing anymore. That, you know, she might have ulterior motives and there could be some conflict, but I'm not as sure as I was before that she's going to be a big antagonist. I'm kind of leaning more again towards Moff Gideon being the heavy antagonist of the season.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Matt, like, especially from the trailers and, you know, the way they made, and again, it's trailer manipulation like they did with The Last Jedi and Rey turning to the dark side, air quote, and all that stuff. Like, and I mean, it's what keeps us engaged. It's what keeps us guessing. Because, yeah, especially at the end of episode one, I really thought that, I don't know, she was going to, like, show up on Mandalore, take the Darksaber from, you know, like you said, be the antagonist. And she definitely, I mean, she came to the rescue. They were working well together. She took him down to the living waters. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I honestly didn't think that, like, Kate, I thought at the beginning, I guess, before the season started, that maybe Bo-Katan would be the antagonist. But like with everybody else, at this point in this second episode, we know that she's likely not. So it has to be Moff Gideon. It has to be somebody else. But maybe they'll join forces, because those folks that are now, and when he comes back maybe to the armorer and shows, I don't know how he's going to show her that he, you know, had, you know, bathed in the living waters of Mandalore or whatever, but he seems to be on the same side as all the other ones, at least in that clip that we've seen in the previews, I guess. But it seems like maybe they'll be teaming up to try to take down some maybe remnant of the Empire or something, and I don't know, maybe rebuild Mandalore. We know that they've already started writing season four, so like there's got to be more to this than just, okay, now, you know, they're back at Mandalore and everything's okay now and they're going to start rebuilding. There's got to be a little bit more to that.
And don't forget, there's also that shot in the trailer. There's quite a few where you see the Fang fighter and the I think it's the TIE interceptors.
Yeah, you're right.
On what looks like Bo-Katan's world. So,
oh, is that where that is?
I don't know. Maybe they go back. They get ambushed by the Empire.
I also wanted to mention, with the whole ceremony, the, you know, down in the living waters, his little "this is the way" chant, or, you know, ceremony, as Bo-Katan called it. I thought that was all really, really cool. And, you know, very much in character. It had some, you know, pseudo religious angles to me, which I thought is a way that a lot of viewers can possibly relate to it. You know, there's
he's very committed. He's committed to his religion, whether or not people see it as a cult, which many do,
right?
Even in the universe. But yeah, I totally agree. Like, it definitely can maybe strike a chord with some viewers. On the other hand, I think the writers are trying to also show how, you know, kind of balancing the scales, how it can be dangerous in one way if you take it too far, and in another way, you know, if you kind of you know, take it more of as, this is something that's important to you, but it doesn't have to apply to everybody. I think they're kind of doing a good balance there.
I agree. And I think the balance is particularly Bo-Katan, because, you know, she's standing there without the helmet on and he's jumping into water with his helmet on. You know, like, he has his way, she has her way, but at the end of the day, they're all, you know, united, so to speak.
They're all Mandalorians.
They're all Mandalorians.
I like that he said he grew up on Concordia. That was a nice little back to Rebels, like a flashback, I guess, because at that point it's like, okay, well, we know he's part of Death Watch, but like we haven't seen that in live action. So I like that they kind of mentioned that in there too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I love that we're getting more with the Mandalore system and all the different planets, like Bo's home planet and Concordia and the whole, I don't know. I love that they're opening up the universe. I think it's great.
I feel like it's kind of growing as it goes along, kind of like how George was changing things while he was writing things. So in this case, it's like what we know about Mandalorian culture or mythology is kind of evolving as they continue the story. And it's not like static where it's like, this is how it is. And this is how it's always going to be, because of legends being, you know, kind of utilized in some aspects, but at the same time, it's not exactly the same. I thought it was really interesting. And I think Kyle and I had talked about this because we were the only two out of the four of us that looked at spoilers, but like, when it comes to jump scares, I think this is the one episode out of probably all of them in all of Mandalorian season one and two that there were a lot more jump scares. I mean, I jumped a lot. My girlfriend jumped a lot where I was like, I didn't expect something to come out of nowhere, but it definitely, you know, when it comes to that horror aspect and maybe the darker lighting of the scene, like it was definitely one of those situations where I haven't seen that in this kind of series before.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. It definitely had a different tone kind of to it.
I mean, other than the spiders, spiders were definitely another kind of horror thing. But this one was, I think, like definitely didn't expect some of those jump scares.
No, absolutely. Even the Mythosaur at the end, like she's going down and down and down in the water. And I'm like, oh, she's eventually going to find him. Like, you know, I don't know. I wasn't expecting the Mythosaur to be there.
I was or definitely alive. Not expecting. Yeah, I was definitely not like I was expecting some kind of creature, some kind of, you know, more water creature. I was definitely not expecting that one right then. But that's the beauty of, I think, the way they've done things is, you know, no one expected the huge reveal at the end of episode one of season one. So then you get that, and then the next season, you wonder, episode one, are they going to do the same thing? On one hand, you think there's no way because it would just be, you know, a copycat of what they did. You can't replicate that, what, you know, the magic of the baby Yoda reveal. And so then you're just, you don't know, you're in limbo, and you kind of, I think we kind of got lulled into, you know, not expecting something major, even though, you know, we did get the Luke, kind of the Luke surprise at the end of season two, but you always expect the last episode of a season to be big anyway.
Right, so because for them you, to want, do, like, you want that big to come of a, back.
But then for them to do that big of a reveal at the very end of episode two, it was kind of like a holy crap. People who didn't read the spoilers were probably expecting that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And now the Mythosaur is supposed to be dead, right? Like it's not supposed to be alive?
They're supposed to be extinct. So
okay,
yeah, I did some reading up on Mythosaurs again, and they were actually introduced.
Did you read the article I sent you guys?
I did, but nice. I know that, so it was technically introduced by, in The Empire Strikes Back, by, you know, being painted on Boba Fett's shoulder armor. So it's technically kind of where it was first ever seen. But right. I know that there's a really old, I think it was a really old comic. The Mythosaur first really actually appeared. They have been around for a long time in Star Wars lore. And then obviously they were expounded on, I think, more in the Legends universe. And then obviously that was all scrapped. So I think really, like, other than what they've kind of talked about in The Mandalorian, I don't know if there's really a lot of in-canon knowledge and information about them, other than the fact that there are two things. They supposedly went extinct, like, centuries ago or thousands of years ago. The early Mandalorians were able to ride them. What I was going to say earlier about the armor is it's kind of nice that she's there kind of to provide like Mandalorian history in a way, you know, like a lot of what we know about the culture and especially like the, their clan, you know, we're learning it through what the story she's telling or, you know, kind of like the rules she's, you know, like reminding Din of, but like she talks about the songs of eons past. About how Mandalore will rise again and Mandalorians will rise again with the coming back of the Mythosaur. Like they're tied together. And of course, that's why Bo-Katan says that these are just, you know, childish dreams and fantasies because they don't, you know, no one believes that the Mythosaurs are still around. They're kind of, it's kind of cool how it could be, where it could be going, I guess, in the season.
I'm kind of interested to see, as we get deeper into this lore, if, let's just hypothetically say this, if Bo-Katan rides the Mythosaur or tames it into battle or whatever, Would she be the true Mandalore? That's a spelling like M-A-N-D apostrophe L-O-R. That supersede the Darksaber? I mean, do either those... I'm just spitballing here. Like, do either those two things connect? I mean, in my opinion, I think there could be something in their creed where if she's the one who rides the Mythosaur, she's the true leader of Mandalore, and the Darksaber won't matter at that point.
I think the Mythosaurs predate the Darksaber a lot, too. Like, I'm thinking...
Yeah, 100%.
I don't know 100%. That would track,
you know, the
I
dates.
Think.
But I think they were extinct long before, you know, the Darksaber came around, so...
Yeah.
I don't know which then is more important, though.
Extinct with, like, air quotes, because clearly it's not.
Correct. Right. So is it a water creature, too, then? Like, has it just been chilling in the water for...
I guess so. It seems like it can at least stay down there for a while or maybe somehow breathe. I mean, if you look back at the cartoon version of Boba Fett back in the Star Wars Holiday Special, he's riding a Mythosaur, but it's clearly nothing looking like what the signet is or what the symbol is or what we saw in this season.
Oh, I was so going to ask, that's a Mythosaur in the Holiday Special?
I believe it's supposed to be. I can't say 100% confirmed, but like I thought that's kind of where we first saw it, but it was not, you know, like the comic version. It was more right. Just like this big dinosaur he's riding.
Right, see, I just thought it was some kind of monster. I didn't know if the
it's
Mythosaur
been so long
was
since
like...
I've seen the Holiday Special, I can't even remember.
Well, and it's funny because like whip, I thought of that the other day.
Whip.
Exactly, because I thought about that the other day, and I looked because I bought that shirt that has like the old cartoon Boba Fett on it, and he's riding that monster, but it definitely doesn't look like a Mythosaur.
It looks like it's pretty massive too.
Oh, it is. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, because she just flies up; they just fly up past his head, and it looked. I mean, it's hard
tusks.
To see the true scale because it was dark underwater, but.
The tusks were massive and just like it doesn't seem to be like a very violent creature. I mean, unlike the what were they called? The Amites or Animite? I don't remember the name of it. Those weird looking monkey creatures.
Yeah, it's almost like he was just like, or he or she was just like teasing him. You know, yeah. Like he pulls Din underwater and then she comes down and saves him and flies him back up and he just kind of watches him and then, you know, like reveals himself and lets him go, you know?
I mean, what if Mando's presence in the living waters, what if he's the true Mandalore and that's what woke up the Mythosaur?
Or Bo.
Yeah, I mean, just her presence being there.
Could be.
Well, she was in the water too, so you know, I don't know.
Yeah, but he got pulled down. First, we don't know what pulled him down. If it was yeah, we don't know if it was the Mythosaur that actually pulled him down, but I would assume so.
Yeah, it would have to be. I saw some people on Reddit saying that, oh no, he just like fell off.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Like, you don't fall you don't fall that fast, though. I can't use her jetpack to get down there.
Right. I was reading the comments, and they said, oh, well, his armor's so heavy that he sunk. And I'm like, not that quickly. I'm like, because...
No, I mean, his brain would have exploded.
Well, and if his armor's that heavy, how could Bo... I mean, I know Bo's strong, but, like, how could she bring him back up? Like, jetpack or not?
Yeah, she'd use her jetpack to get down there. There's no way. It was definitely the Mythosaur, in my opinion. But one thing I like from a filmmaking perspective is that there's not one shot where you see all of the face of the Mythosaur. There's a shot where you see the tusks and then another one of the eye in the face.
Right.
And yeah, it's very
like
teased. Jaws
where you're just teasing the beast. So,
yeah, so now we have to wait in anticipation.
I'm a filmmaker, that. Exactly.
We have to wait possibly one, two, who knows how many weeks before we actually get to see the full thing in, you know, all its glory.
And it's an old school filmmaking technique, but like, you know, less is more sometimes. Like, let the audience use your imagination, you know, like the Wampa monster in the original Empire Strikes Back before the special edition. Like, you really didn't see any of it. You just saw the hand get Luke and all that. You know what I mean? Like, your imagination creates it scarier than, you know, sometimes what it'll actually be.
I did want to mention something just really quickly. I guess perspectives or thoughts. I was thinking about how in the first episode of this season, we see that, I guess, Mando or Din's prior clan is doing the whole ceremony. Was it Jimmy Kimmel's, was it his son or cousin or family member? Who was it, Kyle?
His nephew.
His nephew. There we go. Okay. So they were doing that whole ceremony and then it was interrupted by that turtle dinosaur or whatever. So like that was that happened in that situation. And then now not only is Din walking in and trying to redeem himself in the living waters, but he gets potentially pulled down by the mythosaur. It seems like there's a pattern here, and I don't know if it's just me reading into things, but like maybe there's something here showing how, you know, how in the original trilogies we had the technological empire versus nature versus the more natural aspects of the world, and there was a battle or a fight between the two. I feel like maybe they're hinting towards something here where, you know, the concept of that religious, more maybe cult-like thing is not what we're supposed to see the character of Din evolving into. He's kind of regressing. So maybe there is a natural response by creatures or something with regards to nature in being like, this is not the way, almost. Instead of this, they're always saying this is the way, right? So maybe this is not the way how you're supposed to be approaching this. And as a Mandalorian, it's not just about this or that. It's not just about Creed. It's not about the Darksaber. It's about more than that. And maybe that's what they're leading us to. I don't know if I'm way off topic here, but it's just kind of something that I thought of.
No, I think that's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it is weird, or I don't know about weird, but interesting how through the first season, obviously, I think everybody wanted to see Pedro's face at some point. Like, you want to see under the helmet. And we finally got to see it at the end. And then season two, we get to see it a few times. And you're kind of hoping then, and assuming maybe for season three, that he's going to kind of move away from that whole, like, I can't remove my helmet vibe. And so we could actually maybe get to see, I guess we could say naked. So we want to see naked then. But it's like he's, you'd like that. But, you know, it's like you say, he's kind of going back the other way, though. And we're not getting this, you know, we're not getting to see Pedro's face, which kind of stinks. Maybe there is something that's going to change him. The Mandalorian is a great character, and I do love the mystique they've built with him, you know, of him not removing his helmet. And Pedro plays it so well. And I know it does, you know, probably works out well for him career-wise because he's been busy doing other great projects. But at some point, like, I feel like it's such a loss to not be able to have Pedro acting unmasked, you know? Mm. So I'm really hoping there's, like you say, there's some way that the story evolves to where maybe he doesn't like have to lose his feelings about the Creed, you know? Because obviously it means a lot to him, but maybe where it changes and he knows that it's okay to take the mask off and be vulnerable with like Grogu and maybe the other people he finally lets him, maybe he'll finally let other, whether it's the mythosaur or animals or people, he lets people get close to him.
Well, yeah. Maybe it evolves more. Like the Creed doesn't go away entirely, but it evolves more. And like, if you think about how, when it started, the Mandalorians were all trying to fight this crocodile turtle dinosaur. Like they were actively trying to kill it. Right. Versus when Bo-Katan's talking about Mandalore the Great on that plaque down in the mines, he tamed the mythosaur. He didn't kill the mythosaur. So he worked together with it, kind of like Ezra worked together with the Purrgil. So it's more of we're trying to live in harmony with nature and with the Force and with all living beings, not trying to kill and destroy things just because they're interrupting something that we believe and hold to be true. But Kyle, what do you think about this? Because I kind of want to know your thoughts on this whole thing.
I don't know. It's kind of tricky. I really think it'd be a missed opportunity not to have Pedro do some acting. And I think the longest we saw him unmasked was episode 7 of last season. And he did great because if you watch eye movement, his eyes and his head move at the same time because he pretends like he's having his helmet on. Like he's just so used to having it on. And I love that, like those little intricacies, I guess you could say. But we haven't really seen him act, you know what I mean, for more than a minute or so at a time, I guess you could say. And I would love to see if they reunite these, some of these clans, Bo-Katan and Mando together or just individually to kind of bleed their beliefs together, I think would be interesting.
Yeah, definitely. All right. How about thoughts for the next episode before we wrap up? Like, what do you think is going to happen? Do you have any idea? Do we want to speculate? Do we want to just be surprised? I mean, speculation's fun, I guess. None of us. Well, you and Kyle are reading spoilers. Matt and I aren't. So,
well, there's nothing left. There's nothing
right.
left.
Oh, there's no spoilers left. Available. Okay. Right. So we won't have that ahead of time. So I like going into it fresh, not knowing what's going to happen. I assume that it's changed Bo-Katan's views on this no longer being just a legend or a myth. Maybe the waters aren't special necessarily, other than that the mythosaur lives somewhere in them. So it's no longer something that's just a part of a story, or like Matt said, children's stories. I know that she's going to maybe have a change of heart, change of mind about this. But I also think that there's going to be, obviously, we had mentioned before in the beginning of this episode how we're going to see maybe the clans unite together against a greater threat, which could potentially then involve the mythosaur in defeating it. But I honestly don't know where we're going with this. And I think that's kind of exciting, because as much as I love spoilers here and there, you know how I loved it for The Rise of Skywalker, and in some ways didn't like some of the aspects of it. But long story short, I really like that we are going into this kind of not knowing exactly what's going to happen. And I think that makes it a lot more exciting.
Yeah, definitely. Matt, how about you?
Yeah, so, yeah, like Kyle says, like I really don't know where the story is going to go. Like, you know, I've got some vague thoughts on it, but, and I love it. I do think they're going to make us wait to see the Mythosaur. Like, I don't think they're going to bust it full out next episode. I think I could see them making us wait at least 1 to 2, maybe even more episodes, because that's only going to build more tension with it, because you're going to keep wondering, you know, when is it coming back. I do think this next episode, or very, very soon, we are going to see Dr. Pershing try to, you know, maybe spring Moff Gideon, if we think that's what he's going to do. I do think that part of the story is going to start playing out pretty soon, but I'm really curious to see what Bo-Katan and the Mandalorian's reactions are together about seeing the Mythosaur. And I kind of wonder if Din even saw it, because was he conscious? Was he unconscious?
I'm going to go with unconscious, truthfully. I'm going with unconscious, but I mean, Bo definitely.
Yeah, so I don't, you know, right. And so, you know, you don't know that. And so what is their reaction going to be together with it? How are they going to react individually, but then also together over the news? And then also both of them discovering that Mandalore is not necessarily cursed, because there is living life on there. The air quality is fine. Like they, you know, they could rebuild there if they want to, and they are now learning this. So this is, you know, that along with learning of the Mythosaur are two huge game changers for Mandalorians. And I wonder what that dynamic with the two of them is going to be going forward. But really, I have no idea. And it's pretty cool to just kind of sit back and wait and think about it for the next week and beyond.
I'm really excited that, again, we have no idea what the next 6 episodes hold. Aside from an Order 66 flashback at some point, Dr. Pershing on Coruscant, and then Mando with some other Mandalorian clans. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw all of that in this episode, but I think we're going to pick up where we left off with Bo-Katan and Mando on Mandalore. They're going to go back to her planet, the ambush by the Empire, realize that Moff Gideon is a threat, and that's us going to just bring him into reuniting clans. With also, like, hey, we're doing this because we also saw Mythosaur and the Factosaur, I guess. And you guys are supposed to laugh at that. Sorry.
Sorry.
There we go.
And I think that'll kind of springboard the rest of the story. Before we wrap up, though, I really want to point out how appreciative we are of the cast for this show and every show, because Obi-Wan Kenobi and Boba Fett get a lot of hate. And
not from us.
The cast and the cast and the crew.
Not from us.
Everyone's always dogging on the volume and things like that.
I know
the effects on those two shows weren't so great. But Mando also had an additional 6 months of post-production time that these shows didn't have the liberty of. And a lot of that comes down to the upper level. I mean, your director and your cinematographer are the one, your lighting people are the ones who made the frame or composite the frames, I guess. So don't put that hate on the crew and dog on the show for things that aren't their fault. They're the same people working on all the shows for the most part. And they're busting their asses out there.
I second that. I agree.
Yes.
I agree too.
I agree. And also, they were just literally today, they were doing an interview with Bob Iger, who is the once and current CEO of Disney. And he was saying how they are focusing now on quality more than quantity. And, you know, they're not going to be releasing 6 shows every year for each franchise and yada, yada, yada. So I think we can look forward to more stuff like these graphics in Mandalorian, even though I didn't think Obi-Wan was bad, truthfully. I know like a couple of them were a little dark and whatever. And, you know, people said it was because it was time and they rushed it and whatever. I didn't have issues with it, but I mean,
I don't care what they say. I don't think any of that's true. No. People just wanted to see something that apparently didn't get fulfilled in their minds and whatever. I thought it was great.
I thought it was fantastic. Every episode. I loved it.
And I think
you guys know, we talked about it. We didn't have our podcast up and running, but we all talked about it every week. So, you know, we all know how we thought about it.
Yeah. And even if we critique things, you know, sometimes like, it doesn't, you know, I think we try to do it in a very respectful way. Like, we love it, and we think, I mean, I think we all have loved or liked every show. And you're not always going to love every tiny 100% little aspect of it. So we're going to critique, you know, some things from time to time. But overall, you know, I think we definitely all appreciate the work and, you know, thought and love that goes into making these shows by everybody that's involved. So I am happy that Kyle brought up that point, because, you know, you can tell, especially watching like the, you know, the gallery episodes and like some of the making of, like, you can tell how much passion all these people have and how much love and care they put into it and try to do right by the fans. And so I definitely have a lot of respect for that.
Amen.
I agree, man.
I just want to meet and work with every single one of them. That's all I want to do, because they share our passion. And, you know, it's why we have this podcast. It's why you guys that are listening listen to this podcast. You know, it brings us together. Who knew, you know, something like Star Wars would bring so many people together? But that's part of the beauty of it.
I would be remiss to not mention General Grievous's cousin Joey in this episode, running around trying to take some blood from Mando and God knows what. That whole scene was a little bit unnerving, definitely one of the jump scares, but I thought it was definitely interesting, because I thought of like the Magna Guard or General Grievous, kind of this robot looking but somewhat living aspect. I mean, he only had one eye, so I guess there was only some parts of him that were actual living tissue, but I thought that was interesting. There was actually a poll on Twitter. I forgot who it was and what account it was, but it was like, do you think this is a surviving Mandalorian? Do you think this is a, like some other new species completely unrelated, or is it Grievous's cousin Joey? And everybody, I think it was like a 70% poll. Everyone's like, yep, it's Joey. So I salute Joey for his time, but he screwed up with Mando and Bo-Katan kicked his butt. So
has anybody here played Force Unleashed? I'm sure you guys all have the original one.
I mean, yeah, you were like 5 years old when I played it, but yes.
Well, exactly. Okay, for those of you who played it, did that character, Grievous's cousin Joey, remind you of Kaz Dehradus? On Rax's Prime, I think it was.
Yeah.
Hopefully someone listening,
all right,
is getting what I'm putting down. Look up Kaz Dehradus after that. Look up his cutscenes. Very, very similar vibes. I love that. I think it was a great callback.
Well, see, and that's them pulling from legends and stuff, and I love it. I still think it might be a different name, but we have Sam Witwer in the universe. I think somehow Starkiller's gonna come into it. You know, I'm not sure.
I don't know about Mandalorian, but
no, not Mandalorian, somehow in the universe. Like, they have Sam Witwer It's a beloved game. Everybody loves it. Not so much the sequel game, but that's another story.
Like, I mean, they had the Sith armor in Andor, so that's kind true. Of a callback. Yeah,
exactly. And I feel like they keep doing all these callbacks.
I think it just depends on if they can find a smart way to put them back, pull them back in. Like, they're not going to just do it to do it.
Well, no, that's true, exactly. Do they do anything just to do it? No, they have a plan. Just like us, because that music means that we've come to the end of our episode. So does anyone have any final thoughts before we say goodbye?
This is the way.
No, that was at the end, but that's all right. Well, we are at the end.
This is the end. This is the way.
This is the end. Yeah, there we go. That's how we're going to end
this
every episode.
This is the way.
This is the way. All right, now we're just talking crazy. All right, well, as always, thank you guys for listening. Dennis, go ahead and say your spiel about social media.
Follow us on social media on Twitter at JabberingJawas, and you can send us an email at JabberingJawas@gmail.com, not email.com, that doesn't exist. You can find us at Jawa Jabber, that's our page, and follow us, give us a like, and send us a comment or a question, and we'll try to read it on the air. Appreciate your time, and thanks for listening.
All right, for Dennis the Phantom Menace, Kenobi, Matt the Radar Technician, I am David Wren, your screen leader. Thank you very much for listening, and may the Force be with you always.